Harrison.
Happy to hear from you. Sorry you lost your audience.
Hey, fascinating. Good morning. My co-counsel, Mr. Shellman, will address the rebuttal. We are here today to address whether or not the District Court of Maryland had jurisdiction to hear plaintiff's claim that Title I under the Americans with Disability Act was violated because she did not receive a reasonable accommodation for her hearing disability. And in this case, Ms. Lee Thomas sought only money damages. It is the position of the Board of Education of Prince George's County that the District Court of Maryland erred in relying upon a Maryland Court of Appeals decision to find that Maryland has waived 11th Amendment immunity, and as a result, that the board could be sued in federal court under Title I of the ADA. We believe that the district court did not have any reason to rely upon the case of Board of Education of Baltimore County versus Zimmer Rubert. First of all, the case is distinguishable, and even if this court took the position that the distinction was not sufficient to make a difference, we believe that the Zimmer case is just plain wrong.
But we're entitled to say it's wrong?
Yes, because in this case, Your Honor, we have a purely federal question of whether or not Maryland has waived 11th Amendment immunity for a claim brought, a federal claim brought in a federal court. The Zimmer case related to a federal claim brought under the ADEA in state court. The Zimmer case does not, and that the issue of a federal claim being brought in a federal court was not before the Zimmer court.
Why do you suppose, Harrison, Judge Green, on behalf of a unanimous court, Maryland Court of Appeals, would go out of his way to put that issue to rest?
I really don't have any idea.
You really don't have any idea?
I really don't.
Wasn't he doing us a big favor?
No.
No?
I don't think he was doing us a big favor.
Well, I meant
us. You.
He certainly wasn't doing you a big favor.
No, he was not. Obviously, the Zimmer court limited, it's a partial waiver, and perhaps that would...
The statute.
The statute would be a good...
$30,000.
Yes. But there is a preemption problem with taking that position.
What kind of problem?
Preemption.
Preemption.
Because essentially what the Zimmer court did was to limit liability to $100,000, and as you know, under the ADA, a plaintiff can recover up to $300,000. So the state law would stand as an obstacle to the accomplishment of the full purposes of the ADA. And that means that they, according to Zimmer, yes.
Okay, so that would be false.
Well, I don't know that it would be for them to cross appeal. They've been barred the extra $200,000.
They don't like ruling it.
They could certainly cross appeal, but
they didn't do that.
No, they did not.
I think they did their claim.
Yes, they did.
Claim for $100,000.
Yes, they did, Your Honor. And I'm only raising the issue just to show the faulty premise upon which Zimmer is built. Yes, I'm being consistent. So the question of...
In other words, your point is that the Maryland Court of Appeals somehow ruled in derogation of Congress's intent under the ADA, is that, or under the ADEA?
Under the ADA.
And therefore, that becomes a part of your argument as to why we shouldn't give much weight to them.
Yes. In addition to the court completely ignoring Atascadero and the subsequent Supreme Court cases, as well as other district Court of Maryland cases where the issue of whether or not immunity has been waived, the test, the analysis, was set forth in the Zimmer opinion and then completely ignored. The court would have the federal courts accept that the one sentence in 5518C of the Courts and Judicial Proceedings article of the Maryland Code, which states a county board of education may not raise the defense of sovereign immunity any claim of $100,000 or less, to be a clear and unequivocal waiver of the 11th immunity and consent to be sued in federal court.
As a matter of the General Assembly's intent, right?
That is somewhat correct.
Okay.
We believe that the Maryland...
Isn't it a question of statutory interpretation and the intent of the General Assembly?
Well, the Maryland congressional or the legislative record is scant.
Oh, I'm not going to
and,
the evidence of that intent. I'm just saying the Maryland Court of Appeals has told us, not just in some abstract way of what the state thinks, but the Maryland Court of Appeals has told us quite specifically what the General Assembly of Maryland intended in enacting this statute. I mean, that's at least one plausible interpretation.
That is, in fact, a possible interpretation limited to a federal claim being brought in a state court. But
not what Judge Green said, though.
Well,
that's not what Judge Green said.
But what he said was that and then the footnote 6 in the Zimmer case is the most telling part of the contradiction, and then subsequently the Court of Appeals itself has backed away from this case. In so doing, we acknowledge there has been some conflict in this court as to the impact of the 11th Amendment in state court proceedings, and goes on to focus on state court proceedings and then states Souter's dissent in Alden versus Maine, which clearly this court, and I think you've already in your prior cases heard here today, have addressed the question of should we be bound by a state court case that is constitutionally infirm? Should we be bound by a dissenting opinion in a Supreme Court decision? And the answer to both of those questions is no. Our view is that even the Maryland Court of Appeals recognized its error in the subsequent case of the Board of Education of Worcester County versus Becker. Now, remember, in Zimmer, what the Maryland Court of Appeals says is that any claim cannot reasonably be read to exclude certain categories of claims. Then we get to the Becca case, which is within a year, and the same court says, wait a minute, 5518 is limited only to tort actions. And they reviewed another section of the Maryland Code under the state government article in Title 12 to say that there was no intent to waive the immunity defense for contract claims. Well, which one is it? Is it that any claim cannot reasonably be read to exclude any other category? Or is it that the Court of Appeals is going to pick and choose when it will decide whether immunity is waived, as it did in Becca?
Well, of course, on the one hand, it was the education article. And then the other hand, there's the procurement article. I'm not sure how much we fault the Court of Appeals for paying attention to the statutory structure that the General Assembly has created.
Well, I would point the court to the Board of Trustees of the University of Alabama versus Garrett case, because I think that case is really where the Maryland Court of Appeals should have started. Well, not the Maryland Court of Appeals, because it was the ADEA, but where this court, where the district court, lower court in this case, should have started the analysis, because it's clear under Garrett that Congress has not abrogated 11th Amendment immunity under Title I of the ADA. Then the Garrett court went on further to state that every state in the Union, by the time the ADA was enacted, already had state anti-discrimination laws relating to the classification of disability. And so the holding in Garrett did not abrogate the state's sovereign immunity from suit. Now, interestingly enough, Maryland has a very robust anti-discrimination law that was amended prior to Zimmer. And Title 20, formerly Article 49B of the Maryland Code, provides for the same remedies and rights as Title VII. It mirrors it now. We have the jury trial. We have the right to go into court and not exhaust the administrative remedy right away. So it's not a situation here where there's no other adequate remedy at law for a plaintiff to come in and obtain the kind of relief that traditionally you would have under the federal law. And it also goes to legislative intent. Because certainly if 5518 is adequate to make employment claims synonymous with a tort claim, then why have Title 20? It's clear that the legislative intent for 5518 is for property and casualty damage. For bus accidents, that's how it all got started. And when you read 5518 along with the education article 4105, you will see that it talks about insurance. And insurance for employment litigation is not the same. It's not in the same coverage category, and it's clearly separate. So in looking at the fact that the one sentence in 5518C does not mention any waiver of federal claims, does not mention any agreement to be sued in federal court, and looking at how 5518 actually has been applied prior to the outlier decision of Zimmer, and subsequently the outlier decision in our case of the district court, you see that there are clear rights for an employee under Maryland law to sue the state under anti-discrimination provisions versus 5518, which gives individuals the right to sue the state for property and casualty damage. We find that there was absolutely no basis for Zimmer to be reviewed and discussed other than as a reference to what the Maryland Court of Appeals deems 5518C to be. But we think that this court has the authority to say Zimmer is wrong. And that, in fact,
your appeals, though, from the High Court of the State, that's done by the Supreme Court.
Yes. And unfortunately for us, in the Zimmer case, that did not happen. There was no appeal taken. So we are in the position now in Maryland where all the boards of education, Mr. Stellman represents different boards than I do, we are all in this quandary because for every single case now we're having to make the immunity argument and hope for the best. That clearly is not a good place for a party litigant to be in having to litigate an issue of immunity which was put forth to spare the state from having to engage in litigation and incur litigation expenses and go into discovery. And as we know with school systems, our primary focus is the education of children. So what we need here is clarity, and we need to make certain that the Garrett principles on Title I of the ADA are at least recognized and discussed and applied with the Atascadero and all the cases subsequent to Atascadero, because we believe that in doing so, this court will in fact reverse the lower court's decision, which denied immunity. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Dave Rice.
Your Honor, the essential question is, does the federal court have the authority to overrule the Maryland Court of Appeals decision regarding the interpretation of a state statute?
How do you deal, though, with all of the federal court cases interpreting federal law saying that the waivers must be expressed with regard to the waiver of 11th Amendment immunity?
I think when federal courts interpret state statutes, in absence of state court interpreting their own statutes, that there's more precaution because the right belongs to the state. And to protect the division in federalism between the state courts and the federal courts, the federal courts have developed a system to make sure they don't impinge on the state's waiver. In the same case, when you have a person's constitutional right to not incriminate themselves, these are examined closely. But I think the situation here is extremely different. When Maryland, the highest court in the state of Maryland, has said, we find a waiver. And
David, you have to concede there isn't an express waiver.
I concede there's not express waiver. And I concede that in light of the federal decisions of federal precedents, which Maryland is not bound to follow, because Maryland is a state court. And I think it goes even more fundamentally.
Then what happens to us, though? We're bound by those
decisions. You're bound by those decisions, but you're bound by the state court when a federal court.
Right, but what if they clash? Isn't that the situation we're in?
Yes.
The federal decisions say that there has to be an the most expressed language by such overwhelming implications in the text. And that's just not here, okay? And so, but we have the Maryland Court of Appeals saying that, that the language is sufficient. So we have two principles that are colliding, or have collided. So why does the Maryland principle trump the language of Edelman versus Jordan and the numerous other cases dealing with the express waiver?
For two reasons. First of all, the Supreme Court has already ruled on this very issue, and the state, in Palmer versus State of Ohio, we had a very similar situation, and that is 248 U.S. 32, where this exact same issue came before the Supreme Court, where a state had ruled that there was a waiver, and the Supreme Court said essentially the argument we have here, that the waiver of a state's immunity is not in itself a constitutional issue. The state's right not to be sued or to have sovereign immunity existed even before the Constitution, and it was codified in the 11th Amendment. And so if a state has determined by its highest court that immunity has been waived, it's not a federal question. They could be wrong. I mean, the case of...
You say the state court speaks for the state.
The state court speaks for the state.
The high state court says it's a waiver. That's the end of the story.
That's the end of the story. And I also point to Delgado versus the state of Rhode Island. Exact same situation. It's the First Circuit case where Rhode Island had the highest court in Rhode Island had determined under very similar circumstances where there was no explicit waiver in contradiction of all the federal authorities. And the Court of Appeals for the First Circuit said, well, we're not the parents of Rhode Island. We're not supposed to protect them from their own, if we perceive it, even be foolish. They have their right to autonomy to make decisions regarding their own laws, even if we think it's foolish. And so what they're asking you here is to parent the state of Maryland, to tell the highest court in Maryland that you are wrong on an interpretation of a Maryland statute, that you're not doing a good job in protecting your own state.
If we can step back for a moment, I have a couple of questions that I'm sure Mr. Thelman will want to answer as well. First of all, why is it so important that this case be in federal court?
The case was, I don't know why.
What I mean by that, let me elaborate. If we should rule against you here, you refile this, and maybe you've already filed a protective action, but you refile this in state court, correct?
The same argument regarding the waiver of immunity would apply in state court. I mean,
but clearly, clearly, you win in state court, right?
Let me just put it to you.
Let me be clear. You don't believe for one second, do you, that the Circuit Court for Prince George's County would say that Judge Green was wrong?
That is true, and I believe this court should say Judge
Green. All right, I understand that's your position, but if you're in state court, you're not having this argument, right?
I agree.
You're not having this argument with counsel for the defendant, and you're not spinning these wheels, right? So I mean, if you can't answer, if you'd rather not answer, that's fine. But, why is it so important to be in federal court here? Is there any... I'm just asking really a practical question.
Well, because this expands...
Are you not admitted in Maryland?
Yes, I am admitted in Maryland. Okay. I'm federal court. But the
question, I know that was a stupid question, but I'm sorry. I'm just trying to figure out...
Why is this particular case here in federal court?
Is there something we're missing or something we're not supposed to see?
No, it's not something you're not supposed to see. This precedent here goes way beyond this particular...
I understand that. So is this a test case?
In a sense, I...
Okay, good. That's fine. That's fine. Test cases are important.
Because this is a test case of whether or not the school board can be sued under these federal statutes. And for instance, the one case, the Zimmerman case, is under the age discrimination statute. It's not under this particular statute.
Both of you want this thing to be decided.
I'm sorry?
Both of you want this thing to be decided.
Absolutely. We want clarity.
And you don't even contest jurisdiction. And they're up here on a non-final order. And you don't even raise the fact that they're up here on a non-final.
Well, I think that they have the right to appeal if they're asserting their immunity to court to make that decision. What the appeal is about is they're asserting the immunity as whether or not federal courts have jurisdiction. I do contest that.
Under the collateral order doctrine.
Yes.
Oh.
And I think that's cited in the brief from the school board, the reason for the appeal, and I researched that and I didn't see that. But like you say, we want some finality on this issue, whether these federal statutes, the discrimination statutes, the age discrimination employment statutes, whether or not the school board can be sued.
Now here's the rest of my what I call a practical pragmatic. There's no question Title VII applies against the state, correct?
I would agree that in both of these circumstances now there's no question
there's no question.
The fact that there's...
And my experience on the District Court of Maryland was, I'm sure there were exceptions, but every Title VII case that I'm aware of filed against a state agency, school, board of education, whatever it was, they removed every one of them from state court to federal court. They always wanted to be in the Fourth Circuit. So now my question to you, and Mr. Stellman can answer this, why all of a sudden, at least in the context of the ADA, and from what Ms. Hairston said, it seems to be a larger issue percolating, I guess.
Yeah.
Why do the boards of education and perhaps other state agencies that share the state's 11th Amendment immunity, why don't they want to be in federal court? What is going on here?
I don't really know that, because that is universally true that when we file in state court, they remove the action in federal court. Because generally, the Fourth Circuit is relatively conservative to employment cases, and a lot of those cases are dismissed in summary judgment. And so I think that it feels more favorable.
You think they're just trying to establish a principle for all the boards of education around the state?
I do believe that. I think that...
So they get to choose. Then it would be Mr. Stellman and Ms. Hairston who decide whether in a particular case that's filed in state court, whether to remove it to state court, to federal court, or leave it in state court.
I think that...
Because the Attorney General doesn't represent the boards of education.
No, they usually hire private firms to do that. I think certainly the school wants to maintain the advantage of being able to choose jurisdiction of where these cases can be filed, and certainly plaintiff's attorneys, we want to, certainly for our clients, maybe balance those scales more by being able to determine if these actions can be brought in state or federal court, and maybe, kind of counterbalance that, because universally in the past they have had that power that, you know, where to choose the venue of these actions, the jurisdiction of these actions. And so I think this case has greater implication than just here, and certainly I guess we could have been in state court, but the precedential value of that wouldn't have been
I think it's far-reaching, and I think the school board certainly wants to limit this, and that's why they're here.
And by the way, you asserted a Title VII claim, but that's been dismissed, is that right?
No, I never, no.
You did not assert?
No, this is a strictly
ADA
case for Americans with Disabilities Act, yes, was never any. What had happened, what was the summary judgment, my amended complaint was to limit
yeah, that's,
the amount
your,
of damage.
Your original complaint says count one, Title VII.
Oh, then that must have been. I don't recall that.
page 9 of the joint appendix.
That was a mistake. I typed it out when I was on the Title VII. I think that was.
I see. You actually allege an ADA claim.
Yeah.
In that count,
yes.
But it's labeled. It's the label.
That's
I
right.
see.
Right.
Okay.
And what the amendment was about was that the complaint was amended to conform with the jurisdictional
right.
limit in Rupert Zimmerman. Right. $100,000. And
back to Zimmer Rupert. Or,
yes.
I'm sorry. Did you finish?
No, I'm done. Thank you. Thank you, Judge Keene.
Can we get back to Zimmer Rupert for a minute?
Sure.
You said that the highest court of the state has told us that there is a waiver, but wasn't the portion of Zimmer Rupert that was talking about federal court jurisdiction actually dicta? Because that wasn't an issue. So how has the state court actually spoken to us by way of authoritative holding as opposed to dicta? I don't think you've answered that quite yet, Roy.
And I think Judge Davis has been kind enough to point out that most of these cases, even though they start in state court, are moved to federal court, and so that was why the state probably addressed that issue to say that if this is removed up to federal court, then you know that
right.
first thing
you
can
still have a dicta problem.
I think that they were addressing an issue that frequently happens in these cases that these are moved to federal court, and
yeah,
I think that they could.
If you could answer why isn't this dicta rather than an authoritative holding of the Maryland Court of Appeals regarding the federal court jurisdiction?
I think. Because you're saying because it was a state court action,
mm-hmm. right?
It was a state court action regarding a federal claim.
Yeah,
and
but it wasn't
in federal
holding regarding federal court jurisdiction.
Right, exactly. But I think they were pretty definitive in their
definitive
in their interpretation, and I think
you admit it's dicta.
No, I don't admit it's
dicta.
I don't admit it's dicta because I think the practicality of the situation is most of these cases are removed from state court to federal court, and I think the court wanted to make clear that if this is in state court or federal court, then we find a waiver in either case. And I tell you why.
Don't you think Judge Green is trying to deal with Alden versus Maine? Isn't that what he's doing? Isn't that why he went out and said, by the way, federal court? We believe this is true as well?
That might be the case. I don't, there's nothing in the opinion, maybe, and I think that would be speculation, but what happens quite frequently, and I actually cite a case, is that when these cases come before the district court and they're unsure, say, for instance, they'd left out that part about the federal court jurisdiction, is that that case probably would have been remanded back to the Maryland Court of Appeals for clarification. I cite Proctor versus Washington Metropolitan Transit Authority.
I'm sorry. I'm not sure I know what you mean by remanded to the Maryland Court of Appeals.
But a question would be certified back to Maryland.
Well, you know, that's where I was going with
right.
Judge Keenan. I don't know if Judge Keenan was going there. Should we certify this question in this case?
I certainly would have no problem with that.
You would have no problem.
I certainly would have. And I think that's the ultimate place it should go. I don't think the federal court has the authority to say, Maryland, you're wrong on a Maryland statute.
You understand the irony in that. You could be in state court later this afternoon if you wanted to.
I could be.
And you just agreed that we could certify it.
I agree. Because the district court does it all the time. They ask the Maryland courts to clarify if you believe there's some issue that needs to be clarified on the Maryland opinion on Maryland statute, then the Maryland Court of Appeals is the correct person to do so.
But you still agree with Judge Keenan, do you not, that that's not, strictly speaking, binding on us? It is a federal question.
I agree that this is a federal case. I don't think it's a federal question. It's a federal question in the sense is, who gets to make the decision? Does Maryland's authority interpret their statutes and rules, or as you as a federal court, can you tell Maryland, the state of Maryland, that they're wrong?
Well, why isn't it an issue of federal law, though, as to how expressed a waiver has to be? Does it have to be explicit. Why isn't that a question of federal law that is before us and is capable of binding on us to say that it has to be explicit in no uncertain terms?
As way back as 1918 in Palmer versus Ohio, I said
back to the Supreme Court case.
The Supreme Court case.
You're saying that
the Supreme Court says it's not.
You're saying it's not explicit in the statute. The Supreme Court is negative.
No, I'm saying the Supreme Court has said that this issue of whether or not the state court says that a waiver has occurred, that that is not a federal question. It says no federal right being involved, and then cites Ellendorf versus Taylor. It says, and I can read the quote, it says, whether Ohio gave consent must be determined by consideration to be given by the constitutional amendment quoted. This is the constitutional amendment in the Ohio statute. And this is a question of local state law as to which the decision of the state Supreme Court is controlling with this court, the Supreme Court, and no federal right being involved. And so, what...
You're saying the principle of federal law here to the High Court of State.
Exactly. I save a little more time. I just want to finish up. I don't only say that, but Judge... We had an opinion or a decision where the district court judge, William Day, basically kind of took Maryland, the board to task for saying that the Maryland Court of Appeals, who are judges appointed and elected by the state court, are not competent to interpret the Maryland statute, and that basically, they didn't understand the rules of construction, they didn't understand the laws, and basically challenged the competency of the Maryland Court of Appeals. I think that's essentially what they're doing. The competency of a state court to interpret its own laws, I think it's at the core of federalism. I don't think that the federal court system can say, Maryland, you're incompetent in interpreting your
own laws. Well, I don't think Judge Day was suggesting that counsel were actually passing aspersions on Maryland Court of Appeal.
Actually, it was.
I don't think so. I thought he was saying, go to the Fourth Circuit. Don't come back to me with a motion for reconsideration. He's ruled. Anyway.
Well, I think his language is relative to this. I guess I will respectfully disagree.
It was some strong language.
Yes. So, and I think that ultimately comes down to, you know, are you saying that Maryland is competent to interpret its own statute? And the Maryland Court of Appeals is a branch of the Maryland government. And the remedy is A, we can certify it back to Maryland, or B, if the state of Maryland or the legislature thinks their statute was interpreted incorrectly, they can amend the statute as they've done many times, which they have not done. And so I believe that what the federal precedent said is if there is no decision from the Maryland Court of Appeals of the highest court, or no interpretation regarding a statute. They can either certify it back or they can make a decision.
You actually said something that I was wondering whether you would say. I apologize for interrupting, but you actually said something I thought was reasonably important. The Maryland General Assembly didn't react negatively to Zimmer.
Not at all.
I mean, it would be a very simple matter, would it not, if the President of the Maryland Senate and the Speaker of the House of the Maryland House of Delegates looked at that opinion and said, oh, my goodness,
this is not
what on earth is Judge Green thinking? We didn't mean to be sued in federal court. It would take all of half an afternoon to get the statute amended, right?
And also the Supreme Court.
And they have done that.
They have not done that. And the Supreme Court.
Is that an acquiescence that we can take into account?
I think you can take that into account because the Supreme Court said even if Maryland changed the statute in the middle of litigation and asserted an immunity, that we would be out of court. So,
if you do it just from one legislative session, we only had one intervening session.
Oh, I believe. I mean, that's a simple change in the law.
We asked over a period of time.
I believe just inserting that word, that some words of the fact that the immunity.
Created by this subsection applies only in state
court. Is very easily done. And so I don't believe that would have been anything complicated. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Delman.
May it please the court. Judge Davis, I heard you warning me that I had some questions to answer, and I will try. And they're both practical and legal answers. Why do we try to get into federal court? Because as a practical matter, summary judgment is more available. I'm going to be brutally honest. It's a lot easier to get away from a jury in a federal court, and that's what defendants like to do.
Of course. And if you win here, you and Ms. Harrison would reserve for all of your Board of Education clients and all the other clients around the state of Maryland to make that decision, wouldn't you?
Not necessarily, and that's because...
What do you mean?
Well, because of Lapidus
Justice
versus...
Justice Breyer says very clearly a removal to federal court affects a waiver of the 11th Amendment immunity. Couldn't be more clear.
Exactly. And the problem...
So in this situation, you have a win-win, right?
Well, here...
I mean, your clients have a win-win. Your clients have a situation where heads we win, tails you lose, because we get to choose. We force the case in the state court, and then we make tactical and strategic decisions based on our litigation assessment whether we want to be in state court or federal court.
Not necessarily, Judge Davis.
How is that wrong?
Because of Lapidus versus University of Georgia. The problem is Lapidus came along. I call it the case where the attorney general outsmarted himself. Where in Lapidus, Justice Breyer addressed the problem with waiving your immunity by walking into federal court. They were in state court. Why was Zimmer-Rubert remained? Why did it remain in the circuit court for Baltimore County and not get removed? Because I feared after Lapidus that had I removed that case to federal court, we would have had the Lapidus waiver of 11th Amendment immunity by being in the federal court. It's an implied waiver by my own action, my litigation strategy. I couldn't afford that risk, so I stayed in state court, never dreaming that Judge Green, in footnote 6 of Zimmer, would not simply misread Alden versus Maine, but would quote and rely on Justice Souter's dissenting opinion to say that, oh, there is no sovereign immunity in the state courts under the 11th Amendment.
Why isn't the Maryland Court of Appeals entitled to agree with Justice Souter in interpreting a Maryland statute?
Because Justice Souter was in dissent. They're interpreting.
It doesn't matter whether he was in dissent. It's the Maryland Court of Appeals interpreting a Maryland statute enacted by the Maryland General Assembly.
But the problem is, they are dealing with a purely federal question. I think Judge Keenan was on to that. It is a purely federal question.
But the answer to the federal question would be deferred to the highest court of the state.
Unless the highest court of the land, the Supreme Court, has said, no, it's not good enough. For them to say in a decision, in Zimmer-Rubert, any claim that contemplates everything, including the Atascadero-specific waiver, and then within 18 months to say in the Beckett case, which I also argued to our high court, Judge Green, again writing, this time said, well, we really didn't mean any claim. What we really meant were tort claims, oh, and employment discrimination claims, which are a form of tort.
Because you had a different statutory provision at issue. That's what state courts do. They interpret state statutes.
And the problem is, and this is really, this case is unique because Zimmer-Rubert is one of the only times that a state high court has interpreted a statute to determine its compliance with the 11th Amendment immunity requirements of Atascadero and Edelman. It's the first time any state court that I know of has actually done it. Those states that have written the law correctly, their waiver, like the New Jersey the Port Authority that's mentioned in the Feeney case, those statutes are specific about form. And to say any claim, I don't care if it's our high court, as much as I defer to them on interpreting state law, when they're interpreting the Constitution and the constitutional right of the state of Maryland and its agencies, including my school board, they have to follow Supreme Court precedent. And at that point, it is indeed dicta. What they did was address, there are two problems for Zimmer-Rubert. It's wrong on its face, and it is dicta. The point where
certify the question?
I don't think that it's necessary, Your Honor, to certify the question.
I understand that, but should we? Would that be showing an appropriate level of respect and comedy to our state court colleagues?
In a case of constitutional interpretation, with all due respect to my high court, no. Not necessary in this case.
Because you're afraid of their answer.
Well, I'm not sure what their answer will be, given that in Becca, they changed their mind about what any claim meant. So within 18 months, they changed their mind and they cut back dramatically on what they meant in Zimmer Rubert. So I don't know what they're going to do. Your guess is as good as mine. I'm willing to roll my dice and take that chance if that's what this court chooses to do. But I again believe that it is unnecessary that the federal courts, and this court in particular, has the determination to make ultimately is whether or not Maryland has effectuated an appropriate waiver. And frankly, if you looked at a statute and you looked at a court's interpretation, they're really the same thing.
Would you be prepared, and this is going to really come out of left field, Mr. Feldman, but you're used to me. Would you be prepared to represent to us that you would never, ever, under any circumstances, remove a case from state court if we ruled in your favor? Of course not.
Probably not.
No, of course not.
And it's not just because I don't like to make broad statements. Lapita scares me to death from removing cases that I would then want to invoke 11th Amendment immunity. I want to make a quick point before I run on Palmer v. Ohio. First, that wasn't an 11th Amendment issue. It was a case where the state's highest court said that the state was off the hook, not on the hook, for liability in a taking kind of case, Fifth Amendment kind of case. Really is not relevant, and I believe Lapidus effectively overturned it by saying, and this is the key piece, they said that whatever Palmer said, whatever the state courts, high courts say, it really is a federal question for federal courts, and that's your role. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Feldman. We'll come down and greet counsel and take a quick break.